I want to read from the book, and then what I'd like to do is open it up. I love reading, but I think that the discussion is more important. I want to read one of the last passages in the book. For many of you who don't know, but some who do know have read the book, I grew up in a neighborhood called Las Lomas, just outside of L.A., east of L.A. We had enemies called Sangra, which was around the San Gabriel Mission. And there was a war that had been fought by fathers and grandfathers. And I don't even know what started it. They have different stories, but I never really knew. And basically what it was is you got into the barrio, somebody gave you a gun, said, here's your enemies. They killed us and we killed them. When I wrote the book, part of it was a healing, to heal part of that struggle. And I dedicated the book, as you know, the 25, as was mentioned, of my friends. But some of them were my so-called enemies because they're not my enemies. And I never knew how Sangra people would take it. I went back to my old neighborhood. I had some of the homeboys from that time meet with me. They embraced me. They invited me to come speak to the schools and speak to their kids who were going to schools. And then I went into Sangra neighborhood, and people were telling me, hey, man, don't go there, because, you know, it turns out that war is still going on today. In fact, 2 months before I got there, somebody from Sangra had beaten, stabbed, and shot, killed a kid from Lomas just 2 months before I got there. So they were saying, don't go there, man. You know, it's like it's still going on, and they know you and all this kind of stuff. And I said, you know, I have to go there. And I did, and I spoke to all the little chavalillos, little kids, and it was a great, great time, great talk. Nothing happened. It was just beautiful. But again, you don't ever know. There's a lot of terrible damage that goes on, and I wanted people to not forget, because to me, one of the problems is we don't heal. We don't have a revolutionary healing. So many mothers, I've known mothers who have lost two or three of their own kids during this wars, and they try to forget, and they try to not remember, and so many pain and death, and then nobody wants to talk about it, and then the next generation picks it up again. I was fortunate that I was in Northern California, and I was speaking to a number of, patos locos there, and some man walked in, and he sat down, and as I was speaking, I was talking about all this, and turns out that he's a guy that I hadn't seen in 20 years. He was a member of Sangra and was a tecato for 20 years and had kicked it and had started work with youth there in Northern California. And he came to hear me talk. I guess he just wanted to know who I was, what I was about. And when he got up, he started talking about how he had read the book and remembered all these things and remembered the names. And again, he started to cry and talked about how 20 years ago we would be killing each other. And he came up to me with sage and gave it to me as a peace offering. And then I hugged him and told him, that we got to fight for our children now. We got to save some lives. And I was very moved by this, that our enemies who you wouldn't imagine the kind of enemies that this was, the terror and terrible damage we did to each other. I want to read this last part because it's related to that. It's related to one of the homeboys from, one of the guys from Sangra who I call Chavo in the book, who unfortunately was one of the leaders, one of the main guys, but actually what happened is that he got walked into the wrong party. He thought it was just some regular dudes. Turned out 8 members of Lomas were there. They cornered him. They each stabbed him once. As he fell down, he had 8 stab wounds, and then still somebody picked up a tire rim, rusted tire rim, and thrust it down his head and cracked his head open. So I thought that he had died, because sometimes things happen, you don't really find out, you just kind of thought he was dead. Years later, I came back to the neighborhood for a quinceañera, and he's there, he comes up to me, and this is the incident that happened. One of the things, in case you don't know, my barrio name, my placa, was Chin, the Lomas. So it mentions it in here. I made a quinceañera dance at the American Legion Hall in San Gabriel. My cousins, one of Tio Kiko's daughters. I'm older, married with a child, and dressed in plain shirt and pants, hair shortened, not much to show for what I had been through only a short time earlier. I step outside to take in some air. I lean against a parked sedan, looking at the stars, which seem extraordinarily large and bright this evening. Just then, a short figure, wobbling with a kind of limp, moves toward me. He has a blue beanie cap over his head and a dark hooded sweatshirt. "Eugene de Lomas," says the figure. I don't recognize him, not even the voice, which rasps as much as it slurs, no pangs of familiarity. "I guess I am, but it's been a long time since anyone's called me that," I said. "You're going to die." "What are you talking about?" "You thought you killed me, but you didn't," the dude says, hauntingly measuring every word. "I took all your shanks, 8 of them right here." He lifts up the sweatshirt. A ghastly number of scars traverse his torso. A plastic bag is strapped at his side to hold his urine. You did this to me. Look hard. You did this." "You got it wrong, Chava. It wasn't me." "Sure, I heard it all before. I know who did this, and you're going to pay." From the sides emerge 2 other guys, healthy and strong, looking like street, although a lot younger than the both of us. "Chava, listen," I say. "I heard about what happened that night, but I wasn't there. For some time now, I've been working my way out of a useless existence. Now I found something to live for, bigger than you and me, bigger than Lomas and Sangra. You don't want me." Chava gets closer, alcohol on his breath. I can see tears forming in his eyes. "Lomas did this. Somebody has to pay," he yells, while pulling off the beanie cap, revealing a misshapen head with scattered slivers of hair. The scars on his body don't compare to those on his head and the side of his face. "Look what you did to me. Somebody has to pay for this," he repeats. He is so disturbed, I can see him pulling out a knife and stabbing me just to solve his pain. I look at the guys next to me, and they strike me as too young and inexperienced to act. I keep talking. "There's some things to fight for, some things to die for, but not this, Chava. You're alive. I feel for you, man, but you're alive. Don't waste the rest of your days with this hate. What's revenge? What can you get by getting to me? I'm the least of your enemies. It's time to let it go. Time to go on with your life." Chava begins to shudder, to utter something, a guttural sound rising through his throat, a hideous moan. I think he's trying to cry, but it's hard to tell. I don't know what to do, so I pull him close to me. He twists away. The dudes to the side look lost, not knowing their next move, unprepared for what follows. I again pull at Chava and hold him. He breaks down, a flood of fermented rage seeping out of every pore. "If I thought my life could cleanse you of the hurt, of the memory, I would open up my shirt and let you take it from me. But it won't. We're too much the same now, Chava. Let it all out, man. Let it out." I hold Chava as if he were cornmeal in my arms. Then pity overwhelms me. This complicated affection which cuts across the clear-cut states of being we'd rather seek. Here's friend, here's enemy. Here's sadness, here's happiness. Here's right, here's wrong. Pity draws from all these opposing elements and courses through me like an uncooked stew, mixing and confusing the paradoxes. Because now this man I once admired, if not revered, I once feared, if not hated, stands here, a fragment of the race, drunk, agonized, crushed, and I can't hate him anymore. I can't see him as the manifestation of craziness and power he's once possessed. He's a caricature, an aberration, but also more like me, capable of so much ache beneath the exterior of so much strength. After an eternal minute, Chava pushes me away, wipes his face with a soiled sleeve, and then turns. The dudes next to us don't seem to know what to do but follow. I see Chava hobble away, 2 confused teenagers at his side. And as he vanishes into a flicker of neon, I hear the final tempo of the crazy life leave my body, the last song before the dying, lapsing forever out of mine, as Chava disappears, enveloped in flames breaking through the asphalt, rested into the black heart of night. Thank you.